Chapter 4. Aaron Black and Abby Black. I decided to try to find all the people called Black in New York. I would start with A, Aaron Black, and finish with Z, Zena Black. I wrote a list of all the Blacks and their addresses in my notebook. I bought a map of New York and used a red pen to mark where every Black lived. Then, I packed a backpack with everything I needed. The map, the notebook, some small cards with my name, email address, and phone number on them, a flashlight, chocolate, juice, grandpa's camera, and my tambourine. I made one rule about the lock mission. Keep it a secret at home, but talk honestly about it to strangers. On the first weekend, I decided to visit the first two Blacks on my list. When I left the house, I just said, "I'm going out. I'll be back later." And Mom didn't ask any questions. It took me 3 hours and 41 minutes to walk to Aaron Black in Queens, where I had never been before. I walked because I start to panic on buses, subways, and trains. I really don't like bridges either. But sometimes you shouldn't think too much and should just do the thing you are frightened of. That's what Dad always used to tell me. So I took out my tambourine and shook it extremely loudly as I walked over the bridges. Finally, I arrived outside the Wright apartment building. I tried my key in the lock of the front door, but it didn't fit. I found an apartment button that said A Black, and I pushed it. Nothing happened, so I waited, and then I pushed it again. Nothing. Then I pushed it and held my finger on it for 15 seconds.
All right,"
said a voice coming out of the wall. "Hello," I said nervously. "My name is Oscar Schell."
"What do you want?"
He sounded mad. "Did you know Thomas Schell?"
"No."
"Do you know anything about a key?"
"What do you want?"
"I found a key," I said, "and it was in an envelope with your name on it."
"Aaron Black?"
"No, just Black."
"There are a lot of people called Black, and it's a color."
"Yes, I know, but I really..."
"Goodbye."
"But..."
"Goodbye."
I sat down on the ground outside the building and started to cry. I wanted to scream and shout at everyone in the street. Instead, I stood up and pushed the button again.
"What do you want?"
the man said. "Thomas Schell was my dad."
"And?"
"Was, not is. He's dead."
"Dead?"
"Yes, dead, gone, not breathing." There was silence for a few moments, and then he said,
"How old was he?"
"He was 40.
"That's too young."
There was more silence, and then he said,
"Can I ask how he died?"
I didn't want to talk about it, but I remembered my rule, and so I told him everything. When I'd finished, he said,
"If you come up here, I'll have a look at the key for you."
"I can't come up. You're on the 9th floor, and I don't go up that high.
Oh. Well, I can't come down to you. I'm very sick. That's why it took me a long time to answer when you called.
I didn't know what to do, so I ran away. I heard him saying,
"Hello? Hello? Please!"
as I turned away. If I could do it again, I would do it differently. But I can't do it again. Abby Black lived in a house in Greenwich Village. It took me 2 hours and 23 minutes to walk there from Aaron Black's neighborhood. By the time I arrived, my hand was very tired from shaking the tambourine. I tried the key in the door, but again it didn't fit, so I knocked loudly and waited. A woman opened the door and said, "Can I help you?" She was incredibly beautiful, and her face looked like Mom's face. "Hi," I said.
"Hello."
"Are you Abby Black?"
"Yes."
"I'm Oscar Schell."
"Hello."
"Did you know Thomas Schell?" I asked.
"Excuse me?"
"Did you know Thomas Schell?" I repeated. She thought for a few moments.
"No."
"Are you sure?"
"Yes."
But she didn't sound very sure. Was she keeping a secret from me? So I showed her the envelope with Black written on it. "Does this mean anything to you?" I said.
"I don't think so." "No, it doesn't," she said.
But I didn't believe her. "Would it be okay if I came in?"
"Listen, I really don't think I can help you."
"I'm really thirsty," I said, thinking quickly.
"There's a cafe on the opposite side of the road."
Actually, I don't feel very well. I need a drink straight away." It was a lie, and I know it's very bad to lie, but I really needed to spend more time with her. She stared at me for a moment, and I heard a man's voice calling something from inside the house. Then she said,
"Follow me,"
and turned and walked into the house. Everything inside was clean and tidy, and there were beautiful big photographs on the walls. When she was getting me a cup of coffee, the man in the other room called again. This time, extremely loudly. He seemed upset, but Abby didn't seem to notice him. "I love that photo," I said, pointing to a picture of an elephant's head that was on the wall in the kitchen.
"Thank you," she said.
I got incredibly close to the photo, and I could see a tear running down the elephant's cheek. "It's an amazing photo, but it's not really correct," I said.
"What do you mean?"
"Well, elephants can't cry. Humans are the only animals that can cry."
"Oh,"
she said, and looked very carefully at the picture. "I think someone used a computer to add the tear," I explained.
"I read somewhere that elephants are the only other animal to bury the dead bodies of other elephants," she told me.
"No," I said, "that's wrong. They just push the bones together in one place. Only humans bury their dead." Abby was silent. "May I take a photo of it for my scrapbook?" She nodded, so I pulled Grandpa's camera out of my backpack and took the photo. After I had put the camera back, I noticed that she was crying. I didn't know why she was crying, so I didn't know what to say. Was she crying about the elephants? Or the upset person in the other room? Or something else I didn't know about? Suddenly, the kitchen door opened and a man walked into the room. He looked angry and said something I didn't understand, and then he walked away again. Abby didn't look at him or say anything. "Who was that?" I asked.
"My husband," she answered.
"Does he need something?"
"I don't care."
"But he's your husband, and I think he needs something." That made her cry more. I walked over to her and put my hand on her shoulder, like Dad used to do with me.
"You must think this is all very strange," she said.
"I think most things are strange," I told her.
"How old are you?"
I told her I was 12, which was another lie. I wanted to be old enough to be important to her.
"What's a 12-year-old doing knocking on the door of a stranger?"
"I'm trying to find a lock," I told her. "Are you sure you didn't know Thomas Shell?"
"No, I didn't know him."
I don't know why, but I still didn't believe her. I pulled the key out from under my shirt because it was still on the chain that was around my neck. "And what about this key? Have you seen it before?" I said, and I put it in her hand. The key was on the chain, so when she moved forward to look at it, her face came incredibly close to mine. We sat like that for what seemed like a long time, not speaking. I didn't want to move.
"I'm sorry," she said at last. "I don't know anything about the key."
"I'm sorry, too." "Can I take a picture of you?" I asked when I had put the key back under my shirt. She seemed surprised, but she let me take the photo. She didn't want me to take a picture of her face, so I took a photograph of the back of her head. When I left, I gave her one of the cards with my name and email address on it. "In case you remember anything about the key, or just want to talk," I told her.